to the Finance and Budget Committee. Mr. David Porter, at your service, sir.
Thank you. I would address your attention to page 58, action item 8.1 and 8.2. The first one is on a revision of the 2009 and 10 tuition and fee schedule. And the second one involves a water pump site transfer proposed.
I'm going to have 15 seconds to see if get our audience out there quieter.
You want to make sure we have a quorum when you ask for a vote,
that's
huh?
Good.
Yeah. One of the people go away, so a few members can bring them in.
Getting close.
All right, now you got a quorum.
You got a quorum
good.
Now.
Okay.
Take off.
As Mr. Porter, I believe, said, these items, due to timing, did not go through committee. Important distinction. The 8.1 is a revised tuition and fee schedule. The tuition and fee schedule that wait a minute, I think I've jumped the gun, haven't I? We didn't get a motion. We do a motion.
We haven't had a motion. We didn't have a quorum.
Okay. Never mind. I'll wait.
Okay.
Do my comments after you get okay. Your motion and second.
Okay. Again, refer you to action item 8.1 and 2 on pages 58, 59, 60. And we'll ask for a motion on 8.1 to approve a revision of the tuition and fee schedule that's been previously approved.
Move to approve.
Second.
Now I can.
You can
now I can give you some comments. This agenda item is to revise the tuition schedule that you approved in April. The difference is that we had a lengthy discussion on a military and veterans assistance tuition rate that we wanted as a distinct in-state rate. At that time, more information was coming out about the Yellow Ribbon program, administrative requirements. Subsequently, we determined that in order to accomplish what we want to accomplish with that population and to not cause any confusion with individuals that are eligible for the Yellow Ribbon program, we would be better served by not having a distinct rate. But instead, this has no impact on what we're trying to accomplish. What we will do is award a scholarship for those individuals. So the impact to the student is that they will still have in-state rates. But by the fact that you approved a tuition schedule, we wanted to bring it back to you and explain why we are not showing a separate rate. But again, the important point is that it is no change in our commitment to the veterans or the military or our dependent children that would have been eligible as we had designed the program. If you have any other questions, Dean Kaler probably can jump in and help me.
One point of clarification. I was asked what the source of the scholarship would be. Is that just a reduction in fees or?
When we award a scholarship, we have to generate a bill at the full rate. So it looks as if we have tuition revenue, but we intend on the expenditure side to award the scholarship, so it is technically a wash. So the source is the fact that we do generate a tuition entry for it.
Comes directly from revenue.
But we are foregoing that revenue as we had intended with the original recommendation.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carried. And item 8.2 is the approval of a transfer of a small tract of land, 4/100ths of an acre, near the intersection of Nashville Road, for a water pumping station use.
Need a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Motion's made and second. Discussion?
Pretty cheap piece of real estate. So.
This one's pretty straightforward. By state policy, though, we have to declare it as surplus and have your approval.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion unanimously carries. Then I'll direct you to section 10.1 of the President's report regarding the personnel and staff, personnel actions for faculty and staff. I hear a motion that these recommendations be approved.
Move approval.
Second.
Second.
And discussion.
These are moved to the Finance and Budget Committee meeting following board action at our fall meeting last fall. We determined that personal actions are following the Finance and Budget Committee, and we caught that as the agenda was being prepared. We traditionally, those have been under my report, but they are now by board request coming under the Finance and Budget Committee.
Okay. Any discussion?
I have a question. Just kind of looking over all these, obviously a lot of this stuff is fairly straightforward, makes a lot of sense. I was looking, I guess it's on page 66, a Dr. Wei-Ping Tan professor is getting, I guess, a $32,000 salary increase. And then the little code, the salary increase reason, links to OTHSI, which is other salary increase. And I didn't really know what that...
That one is... unique probably to one research scientist in the entire institution, but I am prepared to give you some explanation on that. Dr. Pan has an employment contract which is based on him being a 9-month faculty member, plus a component that's based on a revenue-dependent unit called the Institute for Combustion Science and Environmental Technology. We call it ISET. It's revenue-dependent. His employment contract includes the base salary related to academic functions, director of ISET, the ability to do some consulting, the ability to enter into contracts. So actually what you have before you is not really a deviation. What we did is that we found that there was probably a mutually beneficial way of administering the contract. We had previously, as most university professionals receive a monthly base salary, and then any other adjustment that applied to Dr. Pan was coming through as a quarterly stipend based on the volume of grants and contracts received by ISET. So we previously had been paying him on a quarterly basis. An interesting fact that surfaced is that probably wasn't in the university's best interest. When you apply, submit proposals for, I'm not the expert on this one, but when you submit a proposal and you're allowed to have an indirect cost assessment, it looks at your base salary, your direct costs, and we had been using Dr. Pan's base salary primarily to drive grants and contract applications and understating his compensation. By actually having this as part of his base salary, we can include it as a direct cost in grants and contracts. The other aspect of this is that it is a little easier to administer on a monthly basis than a quarterly basis in terms of going back and confirming revenue inconsistent with the employment contract, determining what the quarterly stipend would be. But that doesn't mean that we aren't monitoring revenue. So we have reviewed the projected revenue for ISET very carefully and have agreed that the allocation would be on a 12-month basis for Dr. Pan rather than quarterly. But I assure you that on a monthly basis, I'll still review the revenue that's coming into ISET to confirm that there's no reason that we would even be near anything that would be an overpayment to Dr. Pan, because that's very specific in the employment contract that revenue must be generated, and part of his salary is premised on what he is capable as an entrepreneur and as a research scientist to generate through ISET. Now, Debbie, you may have to help me a little more if anybody wants to know more about the employment contract. Is the original one was 2005, and at that time, the reason that I'm addressing this is that ISET is part of the Center for Research and Development, which falls under my area. In 2005, when the employment contract for Dr. Pan was brought to the board, he was within academic affairs, so I may have gone just a little farther than I actually know about the history of this one.
So his performance, I guess, is up over, like I said, just doing a lot better, so he's getting more money. Is that what I'm following? And then plus he's...
Yeah, I'm gonna confess, I'm having a difficult time with this too.
The employment contract allowed for supplemental pay. When we do the supplemental pay based on the contract, we have awarded it on a quarterly basis. We believe this recommendation dollar-wise is consistent with the employment contract. We're just asking you to approve it one time. And then should revenue not... especially as we go at the end of the third quarter, if there's any reason to believe that the revenue generated by ISET grants and contracts is not going to meet budget, then we would come back with a personnel action actually saying that we're going to lower his compensation.
Okay. You're watching that like a hawk, right?
Dr. Burke, is there anything you can add about the employment contract that was negotiated?
I haven't been part of this, Anne, so this was a surprise to me, but I do have the original contract.
This is
and the original contract was brought forward in, I guess, I don't even...
I had 2005, I think. Is
okay,
maybe when you,
November of 2005, November 18th. At that time, Dr. Penn's base salary is $85,000, and that is ENG base in the Department of Chemistry. And his base salary for subsequent years would be reviewed and established annually, and any adjustment in it would be comparable to adjustments, just like any other faculty member, based on performance reviews. So if there was a 3% salary potential year, he too would be under the same guidelines. The second thing was supplemental. Beginning that year, Dr. Pan was paid a supplemental salary of $65,000. And it was understood that that supplemental salary was paid through the university payroll process, but the source of payment was the operating revenue of ISET, and that any increases in that supplemental salary amount would be at the university's direction and discretion and would be considered in light of his performance with increases approved and funded from ISET. And I think that's probably what Anne is bringing forward at this point. One of the reasons this was done at that time is because when Dr. Pan does contracts, he gets, the contract will pay a portion of what his salary is. So when it shows an $85,000 in salary, but actually with the consulting that was permitted in his contract, he was making $150,000. If a contract allowed 10% of base, it was the difference between $8,500 versus $15,000. So This was trying to put truth in what he was actually making at that time, and that was with his consulting work. In any event, I'm assuming what Ms. Mead's bringing forward is after, between now and 05, a decision that his base amount should be, I mean, his supplemental amount from ISET would be moved from 150 and to 190. Is that what you're...
His total, the recommended salary is 194,096, and I'm showing that the base salary from chemistry is 92,136, with the difference being self-generated revenue
from ISET.
Let me add one perspective here. Dr. Pan is helping us create a learning curve as we move closer to creating true research professors. I would liken Dr. Pan to the lead scientist in a medical center at an institution for the medical school. The contracts that Dr. Pan brings to the Institute for Combustion Science and Environmental Technology are millions of dollars annually, and he represents our best opportunity for commercialization and technology transfer. And he is no longer a professor in the classroom per se, and he is helping us create the model, Dick, for a research professor that will be coming back to you in due course and not too far along, where professors earn based on their ability to generate contractual research capacity and commercialize our intellectual property. And Dr. Pan will also be part of perhaps our first major. We've had some spinoffs, but he represents what will likely be our first major spinoff series of companies. And it's not business as usual, particularly as we mature in a research context. And I would love for every member of the faculty on this campus to get rich based on their ability to generate research and contracts. Some are more positioned so than others, and we're going to give them every opportunity to go for it. I mean, that helps, I trust, put that particular faculty position in context.
Yeah. All right, thank you. I just didn't know what other meant.
I knew it was complex, and I was trying to find a way to present it. That
oh, yeah. So it's good to hear that he's generating that revenue from some of the work he's doing. So that's cool to hear.
We get indirect cost recovery from every research grant that he generates and every contract that ISET signs. So our research enterprise is fed well based on the work of he and his team in our Institute for Combustion Science and Environmental Technology.
Any other questions or comments on the personnel action?
I do have one comment that I'd like to go on record as saying, commenting on pages 74 through mid-76 in regards to the facility management increase rates. I want to go on record and compliment and commend the administration as well as President Ransdale on his positive and very swift and quick action to those individuals and to that issue. This issue was brought before the university staff council back in either January or February of this year, and once again I'd just like to compliment him on his actions toward that agenda item. And as most of you may know, our facilities management group is, you know, primarily directly responsible for the way our campus looks today. And as you all also know, and as especially as we talked about yesterday, our campus is one of the primary recruiting tools that we have for prospective students. So once again, I just want to thank the administration and President Ransdale for that.
What James is speaking to are his list on page 74, 75, 76, and without belaboring the point, the Student Life Foundation had a incremental boost for their building service attendance in the residence halls and had the independent capacity to do that, but the facilities staff that serves our residence halls is so close with those building service attendants that serve our academic buildings and other buildings across campus that was creating a tension point, understandably, with a significant portion of our facilities employees who didn't get that boost. And staff council addressed the matter. We listened, and Howard Bailey and John Osborne worked together to ensure that all of our building service attendants were treated in an equitable, like manner. And that's what you see is the second part of that action, to ensure that those in that job classification category were treated fairly.
I just had two more things. I just kind of wanted to say, I noticed on page 73 that the Equal Opportunity /504/ADA Compliance Department was doing a classification to give about a little over $6,000 more dollars to somebody, just hearing a lot of student concerns. This university is ADA compliant, you know, I don't dispute that, but there are a lot of people, there are students I represent who have at times had trouble to get through the doors on this campus and are really in a hurt, you know, and sometimes are frustrated on some days and feel like, you know, it's not compliant for them in that moment. I don't have necessarily a problem with it because I don't know enough about it, but as far as that department, you know, and across the university too, we want to make sure that we're really definitely sticking our neck out for our disabled students who just, you know, we're on a hillbound university, and that's a reality that's not natural to a lot of places, but we got to make sure that we're definitely allocating the funds needed to take care of them. And then I have just one other quick point. I'm pleased to see that on page 68 we're hiring Thor, the Norse god, to be a building services attendant. I saw that. I was really, I don't know who Thor is, but I was just really pleased by his name. It's good to have him.
A mythology fan, are you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why is that? I don't have a
response. It's a history.
Norse god of thunder, I think. That should be interesting.
Be on the lookout for that.
That's what he said.
I do have, it's not a part of your booklet, but I just received it yesterday, the list of all the of university employees, full-time employees who are receiving the one-time bonus that is in the compensation that goes out today to our faculty and staff with a floor of 500 and a cap of 1,000. Most are getting 1.5%, but I do have this list if anybody would like to see it. But it's simply what each employee is receiving in that regard, in that range from of $500 to $1,000.
I have a question from Tony Glisson. When is that going to be available on the HR website? Is it up, the report that the president has?
I guess we did not place that out there. I suppose we could have.
Yeah. I can put it out there. I think that'd be great. Thank you.
I can respond to the question our student had asked about. Are you referring to the ADA adjustment for Joshua Hayes on page 73?
Yes.
That was a reclassification situation. The Office of ADA literally is short one position. So we reclassified that position to take into consideration the additional workload that that individual had to assume because of a shortfall in staffing. I don't think in my opinion, it was justified. He had to pick up considerable amount of additional work for that office. I don't think in any way it reflects negatively on the quality of our adherence to ADA compliance on our campus. It's always going to be a challenge, for sure. But that really shouldn't be related in any way to any concern about ADA compliance, rather than it was an adjustment because of an addition to his workload.
There's one that's not included in this list, and I was I thought it was going to be on here, but apparently the deadline to get the information in was not met to make this list. But at the January meeting, Wood Sealy made a report with regard to Coach Elson, and there was discussion of his contract and the contract extension and his salary going to the midpoint of the Sun Belt Conference coaches and the transition with football. That is not listed on here, and I presume, Wood, you'll make that report at the that will be included at our October meeting. You'll be prepared to speak to that at that point. But the board had that discussion at our January meeting, so some of you may not have noticed that that did not here, and you may have been expecting to see that in this list, but it's not on here, and the forms to prompt that action didn't come until after the deadline for this meeting had been set.
Okay. No other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Passes unanimously.
Thank you, David. We'll now move on to Student Affairs Committee. Jim?
Yes, we have no actionable items, but we have several information items. And I guess first one's on sustainability. John, were you doing that? Or?
Morning, everyone.
Good morning, John.
This time of year is really May of 2008. We established an Office of Sustainability, and we positioned it inside the Division of Campus Services and Facilities. And we established a position that is known as the Coordinator for Sustainability on campus. Now, this person, of course, works within the division to assist our activities related to sustainability, related to facilities management, our utilities, our waste management, our transportation services, our new construction and renovation activities. As you might imagine, there is someone in this regard to assist us in that way. But this person in this position goes well beyond that and aids and assists student organizations, the academic community. We have a sustainability committee. And what I wanted you to know is simply that today we're going to give you an overview of what we've accomplished and what's happened in the last year related to the campus sustainability initiatives. And the person who heads that up is Christian Downing, and I have her here this morning to walk you through over a brief report.
Thank you for the opportunity to share with you the news of how we're progressing at WKU as far as sustainability. I'm really excited about the accomplishments that we've made over the past year, and I think that you're going to be really excited about it too. Before we really delve into what our progress on campus and sustainability, I wanted to talk a little bit about what sustainability means, because if you Google the word sustainability, you'll find lots and lots of different definitions, and sustainability means different things to different people. And so, I just wanted to talk about what we mean when we talk about sustainability in regard to Western Kentucky University. The most common definition that you find for sustainability in higher education is this one by the World Commission on Environment and Development Brundtland Report in 1987. And their definition is that sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. It might surprise you that this definition comes in from 1987, which was, before this new movement for sustainability and green. But the idea of sustainability actually goes back much, much further than that. Over 100 years ago, actually 101 years ago, Teddy Roosevelt gathered his cabinet members, his governors, his top scientists, his labor leaders, his industrialists, his Supreme Court justices. He gathered them all together and to basically talk to them about sustainability. And he said to them, "We have become great because of the lavish use of our resources, and we have just reason to be proud of our growth. but the time has come to inquire seriously what will happen when our forests are gone, when the coal, iron, the oil, and the gas exhausted. We must handle the water, the wood, the grasses, so that we will hand them on to our children and our children's children in better and not worse shape than we got them. Now, President Roosevelt probably didn't know it at the time, but he was talking about sustainability. President Ransel has a pretty great idea about sustainability, too. And his idea is that as an institution of higher education, we are obligated to act as a model of conservation and efficiency. We will emphasize personal responsibility and lead by example, making significant changes in the way we build, operate, and teach. WKU seeks to be known as a leader in sustainability while ensuring a safe and comfortable present and future for our students. Sustainability isn't just about being green. Now, obviously, as an environment or as an institution of higher education, we want to be mindful of the environmental impacts of our operations and services, but sustainability is also about social and economic issues, and we find that a lot of times environmental problems most affect those people that are minorities or low-income individuals, and so sustainability gives us the opportunity to act as responsible global citizens, but also sustainability initiatives offer great opportunity for cost savings, and I'll give you some evidence of how our sustainability initiatives are working to reduce our operating costs here at WKU in a few minutes. And President Ransel, you'll be proud to know that WKU is emerging as a leader in sustainability, not just in this region, but beyond. In the past year, our initiatives, which range from everything from elegantly designed parking lots, which are going to reduce stormwater runoff and improve stormwater quality, to research and student projects in alternative fuels, like the one that we saw at the farm yesterday. The media loves these stories, and they've picked
up. And that was a really cool photograph, too, by the way.
Yes, thank you, Clinton Lewis. The media has picked up a lot of these stories. The media loves green stories these days, and we're happy for that because that helps us celebrate our successes. And our stories have been picked up by a variety of media outlets, including the Associated Press. One of my very best moments so far as WKU Sustainability Coordinator was when I got a phone call one day from my counterpart at Oregon State University. The Oregon State University Sustainability Coordinator called me because he heard about our winter hard shutdown, and he wanted to know. He said, "What a great idea. How did you do it?" And I was just so tickled that, you know, we all know Oregon is the green state, and so that he would be calling me at WKU to find out how we're conserving energy. A great moment in my short career as Sustainability Coordinator here at WKU. But to really appreciate how far we've come in the past year or the progress that we've made, I kind of wanted to go back to the beginning. In late 2006, it began with our students. In late 2006, Green Toppers formed the Student Organization for Campus Sustainability. And Green Toppers have done some pretty great projects. They created the Big Red Spikes Bike Lending Library. They used abandoned and confiscated bikes and fixed them up, and now we lend these bikes out to anybody that would like to have a bike for a day or a week or an hour. They also do the annual Earth Day Festival, which is held on the South Lawn and has become quite a well-attended event. But probably the most notable thing that Green Toppers has done is they started a dialogue with our president and our provost. And when Green Toppers went to talk to the president and the provost, they listened intently, and they've offered full support for campus sustainability. And, you know, that's gone a long, long ways with our students. They know that administrators are behind them in their endeavors to help create a more sustainable campus.
Christian, where's Big Red's helmet up?
That's a really good question. And Green Toppers decided that they were going to have to fashion a custom helmet for Big Red. So. So, as Mr. Osborne said, just over a year ago, the position of sustainability coordinator was created, and created. And it wasn't just green toppers. There were green ideas sprouting all over campuses. I mean, we're seeing things in our dining halls, in our residence halls, in parking and transportation. You know, lots of green initiatives just getting sparked, just going on. And so my job is to kind of advance and promote all these initiatives that are happening all over campus. And the Office of Sustainability, we've recently created our mission statement. And you can read it here, but it's to promote a culture of sustainability at WKU, integrating principles of ecological integrity and social equity into academics, practices, and partnerships. Our goal is to ensure that WKU is an institution that provides innovative solutions to global challenges, prepares students as engaged and responsible citizens, and observes best practices in campus operations and services. The functions are listed here, and I won't read them all out to you, and you can certainly find them on our website if you would like to know more about what we do in the Office of Sustainability. But really, we're up for anything. If you want help greening your office space or with any sustainability project, the Office of Sustainability is here to help out with that. And we're not alone. Just after my position, after I started as sustainability coordinator, President Ransdell recognized that there were many people on campus that, well, actually all of our campus community stakeholders are invested in this endeavor. And there's many people on campus that have talents and skills and knowledge to lend to the effort. And so he created the WKU Sustainability Committee. And, of course, our purpose is to create and advance a culture of sustainability within the community through education, research, operations, and community partnerships. Now, the Sustainability Committee has been in place for just under a year, and we've already managed to make some remarkable accomplishments. The most notable is probably the endorsement and the support of the winter break shutdown, which resulted, as you know, in savings of over 1 million kilowatt hours and over $130,000 over the three-week break. Now, what is probably more important that came out of the shutdown is that people became more aware. And we have evidence that our campus community members are changing their behaviors. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. But it really set the stage for what we wanted to do next. The Sustainability Committee created the Energy Conservation Task Force. And the task force's first job was to create a comprehensive energy policy for our campus. It's kind of unusual for a college campus not to have an energy policy. And we wanted to make ours the best of the best. We wanted it to really guide us towards responsible energy use. We included everything. We included transportation components, building and construction components. But we also emphasize individual responsibility. And again, people are obviously taking the energy policy very seriously because we have seen substantial reductions in our energy use over the past year. Of course, the energy policy was celebrated with a visit by Governor Beshear, and you all may have read recently that the city of Bowling Green has recently adopted an energy policy which is modeled after our WKU energy policy. We know that other institutions are looking at our policy as well, which is extremely flattering. The other things that have been going on with the WKU Sustainability Committee was the creation of a fundraising subcommittee. And the fundraising subcommittee has created the WKU Green Fund. And we feel that donors to WKU would love the opportunity to support our sustainability efforts if only they have the chance. And so now they do have a chance. And you may have seen that sustainability was featured in the spring issue of the WKU Spirit magazine. So hopefully we're really getting the word out that you can support greening objectives at WKU. And donors can donate to something specific that they would like to see happen. Perhaps it's an alternative energy application, or they can just simply support whatever efforts are most vital to advancing sustainability. So lots of progress in the WKU Sustainability Committee. A few things that are going on right now is that we've created a pollution prevention subcommittee. And what they're working on is a stormwater quality management plan for our campus. And again, we feel that this stormwater quality management plan is going to be really special. It's going to be a model that other institutions are going to be able to use, as an example. The other thing that's going on with the WKU Sustainability Committee is they have created a subcommittee to focus on curriculum integration. Now, we know that sustainability works in every single subject that we teach here at WKU, from philosophy to science to business. It fits in everywhere, and so we want to make sure that we're giving faculty the support that they need to integrate sustainability into their curriculums. Now, certainly, again, it's not just the WKU Sustainability Committee that's making all this progress on campus, but lots of other things are going on, too. This past spring, we've had 12 individuals on our campus achieve LEED professional accreditation. And of course, LEED is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. This accreditation is not easy to get. It's a very strenuous study and testing to achieve LEED professional accreditation. Individuals are LEED accredited, buildings are LEED certified, and as you all know, we're seeking LEED certification for the new College of Education. And not only is it going to save us money, but also research shows that in green buildings we have improved test scores, which is pretty exciting, and just improved overall employee satisfaction of their workspace. And so it'll be really exciting to see how our new College of Education does and how happy our occupants are with it. On our campus grounds, and again, we do know that our beautiful landscaping is one of the reasons that attracts students to our campus. We use 100% organic fertilizer. We're planting native species. We're using less water. We're using rainwater capture for irrigation. You know, the list just goes on and on of all the things that we're already doing here at WKU. This past January, Provost Birch made available Provost Pi grants for energy conservation, and we've had faculty turn in some pretty interesting proposals for ways to save energy and save money on campus. And so that's been really interesting to see the engagement of faculty. They definitely have lots of ideas, and it's been really interesting to read the proposals. So far, one proposal has been funded, and that is for Cherry Hall. We're getting occupancy sensors for all the classrooms and smart power strips for all the offices. But you don't have to write a Pi grant to get a smart power strip. If you'd like to have a smart power strip, just give me a call or an email, and I'll make sure that you get one. I'll even send a trained student to help you understand how to use it. Which brings me to really probably the most exciting thing about sustainability here at WKU. The people that know me know that I suffer from chronic sleeplessness, and that's because I'm laying awake at night pondering the really big questions, like how to get people to turn off their computers and recycle. But I also lay awake at night because I'm excited about the student engagement. I have a steady stream of students coming to my office wanting to volunteer, wanting to get involved. They want to tour the Central Steam Plant, and then they blog and Twitter about it. And they, want to volunteer for student green teams, which I'll tell you about in just a minute. We now have three student organizations that are focused on sustainability. In the residence halls, each October, the students compete to see which resident hall can most reduce their use. They really get into it, and it's really fun. And we're getting ready to take it up another level. And, Mr. Kuster's doing some pretty amazing things in the residence halls to provide real-time energy feedback to students. So they can actually go online and see at any given point in time how much energy their hall is using compared to the hall next door. So we're taking reduce your use to the extreme level this fall. It's going to be very fun. The past 2 years, students have raised money and arranged trips to what's called Power Shift. And Power Shift happens every fall. And what it is that thousands of college students from across the country descend on Washington, D.C., and they rally for clean energy and green jobs. And this past fall, they were addressed by speakers like Nancy Pelosi and Lisa Jackson, our new head of the EPA. And our students, you should know, WKU students represented one of the largest delegations of students from a single university at PowerShift this past year. Our students, they care about these things, and they want these opportunities, and they want to be proud that their university is going green. SGA has become very, very involved in sustainability projects, and they were a big supporter of the Campus Community Partnerships for Sustainability Conference, which we hosted here this spring. Now, the conference actually moves to a different university each year, and this spring it was our turn to host, and we had nationally recognized speakers, Jerome Ringo and Chad Pragracki. We did some really great stuff, some service learning projects. We worked on Big Red's bikes. We planted a campus herb garden, which anybody can take advantage of. The herb garden is located just on the berm right behind down in University Center. We had a local foods dinner that was provided by WKU Restaurant Catering. People that grew the food actually were invited to the dinner, so we sat next to the farmers that grew the food for us, which was fabulous. The conference was attended by over 200 people, mostly students, but also faculty and community representatives from all across the Commonwealth. And I have gotten so much feedback about the conference, but one thing that I've heard is that people are saying now across Kentucky, if you want to know how sustainability is done, go to Western Kentucky University. So that's pretty exciting. President Ransdell has described our desire to use our campus as a living laboratory. We want this to be a place where students and faculty can apply the ideas that they have that might be solutions to the problems that you know we face as a global society. And so we're trying really hard to bridge the gap between operations and academics. One of the things that we're doing right now is training student green teams. Students are trained on how to go into your space, and all you have to do is call me up and ask for a green team. And they'll come and they'll look at your space and they'll test your lighting levels to see if you have too much light and there's potential for ballast disconnection. They'll make sure that you have a compact fluorescent light bulb. They'll see if you're a good candidate for an occupancy sensor. They'll install a smart power strip for you and show you how to change the settings on your computer. And students are doing this voluntarily. This is something that they really want to get involved in. But this is only the beginning. You're going to be seeing students that are involved in renewable energy applications, in all kinds of research and hopefully on-campus applications of sustainability and measures. So the thing is that while I can brag on all of these things that are happening at WKU, I'm not responsible for all these things that are happening at WKU. Sustainability initiatives, practices, research projects, it's going on everywhere. And so what we're trying to do right now is create a sustainability alliance. And the alliance will basically represent anybody who is involved in working on making sustainability significant here at WKU, whether it's academics, whether it's operations, whether it's services. Another thing that we want to do is create a WKU green tour. And so the deal is that we already know that administrators and people from other institutions want to come here and see what we're doing. But we also know that sustainability is a recruiting factor, and that the Princeton Review tells us that 60% of prospective students consider the sustainability of an institution when they're making their decision on where to go to college. And so we want a really nice way to formally showcase all of our sustainability efforts. And so the green tour is something to be looking for in the near future. Now, all these accomplishments that we've made over the last year are incredibly encouraging, and they show that we have a commitment to sustainability here at WKU, and people are taking notice. But it's only the beginning of what we can do. It's only the beginning. We have many, many, many great things in store. And so what I'm excited about is coming to you next year and updating you on the progress that we're going to be making in the coming year. Part of my job is to catalog all of our efforts. And so every year I'll be doing the annual sustainability report. Currently you can view the 2007-2008 sustainability report on our website, which is /sustainability. And I'm working on the 2009 report right now. And so if you know of any sustainability initiatives that need to be included in the 2009 report, please, please let me know about it. Our website's under construction, but it should be up within the next 2 weeks. And you can still, in the meantime, follow us on Twitter. It's GoGreenWKU. Do you have any questions that I can answer right now? Or?
Good job.
Thank you.
Very good.
Very challenging to wrap everything up into just a few minutes. There's just so much going on. I'm really excited about it. Any questions at all?
I'll give you one data set. John, help me if I don't get the numbers exactly right. We went into this past year with a budget for utility energy consumption, and costs went up significantly over the course of the last year. John, you may have the numbers. If you don't, when you make finish your report, if you would refer to them. Bottom line is, we challenged the campus to end the year with the same budget that they began the year with for utility consumption, including all cost increases sustained during the course of the year, which were significant, especially from TVA cost increases in the range of 20%. And we ended the year not only under the budget that we began the year with, but we created about $500,000 reserve in energy that will be plowed back into future energy conservation going forward, which means that we reduced our energy consumption in round numbers by about 30%, while costs went up about 20%. And those numbers aren't exactly right, but you get the picture. An amazing, amazing accomplishment for a campus that had one set of behaviors to begin a year and ended the year with a different set of behaviors that had dramatic impact from a bottom line standpoint on utility consumption and cost savings, but also on more sustainable behavior and more responsible behavior, dollars aside. It was a remarkable, transformative year in this regard. So
we have
you and Dale Dyer and everybody involved. Great job, and part of all of our faculty and staff to learn how to be how to conserve and be more efficient.
We have saved 4 million kilowatt hours over last year. This year over last year, and just to kind of put that into perspective, 4 million kilowatt hours is enough electricity to power 350 average households for a year. So huge, huge savings. And we can attribute those certainly to things that our energy manager, Dale Dyer, has done, temperature setbacks and those sorts of things. But absolutely, it's because people are really aware and turning off their lights and turning off their computers. And so it is an amazing accomplishment that everybody is responsible for. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you.
Our next information item is the student code of conduct.
All right, let me ask you a question. How long will your program, your presentation be? We're supposed to leave for lunch at 11:15. We've got 10 minutes. If we went over a little bit, that'd be okay.
But we'll make it happen.
Okay. All right. Because I know you're hungry.
I don't want to stand between you all and any food.
I got my priorities right.
All right.
Okay. All right. I'd like to introduce to you all Mr. Michael Crow. A little over a year ago, we established the Office of Judicial Affairs, which in the area of student affairs brought us into the present century. Since we had never had one before, we've never had such an office. I'm quite happy to have Mr. Crow with us. Mike is a Western alum who's had experience at two other institutions. He was at Virginia Tech and at Vanderbilt before coming here, but he's a Kentucky native with 2 degrees from Western. And I'm going to turn the program over to Michael, and he's going to give us an overview of judicial affairs at WKU, and then I will wrap up with a handout on our housing occupancy level for the fall.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
All right. Again, my name is Michael Crow. I'm the Director of Judicial Affairs, and this office has been in existence since April 1st of last year. That's when I came back to the Hill. I want to start off by saying I'm very excited to be here in front of you all this morning to actually give this office an identity to this campus. Kind of been behind the scenes, picking up where Howard has left off and trying to make sure that everything stays at the status quo of where he has left the expectation for students' behaviors on this campus. So very proud to get the office out there and get it known. As you see here, what I'm trying to do with the office is promote ethics, integrity, civility, and responsibility of all students. That's the basis of what I want this office to accomplish for this university. So it's very important and critical for me, for my vision and my goal for this office to achieve that and to make sure that all students are held accountable and are responsible for their actions. The overall introduction to the office is to let you know that this office is the judicial umbrella for the university. And I'll get to that page here. We'll go over the mission statement, purpose of the office. We will go over statement of values, my values for this office. Building community through collaboration. I'll go through some committees and things that the office works with. And we'll wrap up and close. Again, I stated this office is the judicial umbrella of West Kentucky University, which basically means I have direct supervisory responsibility for the student code of conduct. In consultation with the executive director of Residence Life, they have a student code of conduct that they follow that they have in the residence halls, in which we work together, pointing to Brian. Steve Briggs is my counterpart directly. He's the assistant director for Residence Life, and he works in the capacity of within the residence halls. So primarily what the office has off-campus jurisdiction. And what that means is I have a share agreement with the Bowling Green Police and the WKU Police. So I get the police reports on a daily basis from those two agencies. My office goes through those reports. We identify students that have an active 800 number at WKU, whether it be that they've applied for admission at WKU or they may be currently enrolled. At that point, if it is an alleged violation of the student code of conduct, and you guys have a handout in front of you, it's the red glossy cover there, the code of conduct, there's 24 of those. If any of those are relevant to that police report, I will contact that student via email. Then the next phase is to put an administrative hold on the account so that the student doesn't respond to the email. There will be at some point there is a need for them to navigate their student account. They'll have to come through my office to do so. So it's kind of a little trick to the trade to make sure that we get things done. The other things that the office has involvement with is housing residence life, as I mentioned earlier, things that happen within the residence halls. We'll work together to kind of get a game plan for how we want those things to proceed in consultation on a weekly basis, daily basis with that department. Student organizational cases, I'll work sometimes with the student activities, working with Charlie Pride, things that may come up involving student organizations, the Greek letter organizations, as well as any other organization here at WKU. Student and rec centers, Downing University Center, the Preston Center, there's some things that come up out of those offices. So those are some different places that I also work with and have responsibility for adjudicating those cases as well. Bowling Green Community College, one of my newest areas that I've worked with last year, getting in contact with Dean Reed and making sure that communication is back and forth so that we are making sure that the student's behavior is indicative of what we expect of the students on the main campus. Academic violations, every now and again I'll get some plagiarism cases, some cases where students have falsified attendance records, things of that nature, so those things will come through my office as well. Other forms of adjudication for alleged violations of the student handbook, just anything as assigned, I get it all. There's several cases, I could tell many, many stories, but just if it has anything that has question of the student's conduct on campus, it'll get pushed to my office. Again, this is just another way of looking at how the Office of Judicial Affairs interfaces with other agencies on campus. The admissions piece I did not go over, but I can go over briefly. The admissions office works with my office in the fact that if a student has indicated they have criminal history, they'll have to check a box, number 19. At that point, the application comes to my office. I'll review that application and make a decision based on the student's past criminal history to see if that student is a student that we want to allow to be able to come to WKU. And in many cases, we work with those people as long as they show us that they've had some type of educational outcome or that they've shown that they've had sincerely paid their debts to society. We're willing to allow them to come to get a degree from WKU. Purpose of the office is in order to foster an environment where student learning and growth can be maximized. The Office of Judicial Affairs has a responsibility to ensure that disruptions to the university community are handled in an educational, timely, and fair and timely manner. That in itself is the key to it. Educational is the outcome that I want for every student that comes through my door. I want them to learn from their mistake. I want to be fair in how I treat that student, and I also want to handle this in a timely manner. We have incidences that have occurred on our campus that is very critical that we handle them as fast as possible. In an effort to achieve these goals while keeping our community and its members safe, the office holds students accountable for their behavior, which may violate the WKU student code of conduct, in and outside of the classroom, whether on university property or off campus. That's the key point to a lot of students that are getting educated from the existence of my office. A lot of students don't know that there is off-campus jurisdiction. But because we have this ability to let our students live off campus after their second year, we have a responsibility to make sure that we hold those students accountable that we're allowing to live in the Bowling community. So I've always stated that it's imperative that we have the relationship with the community, a positive relationship with the Bowling community, by upholding, having our students uphold the standards of conduct, whether they live on campus or off campus. Mission statement. The mission of the Office of Judicial Affairs is to maintain a campus community conducive to a positive learning environment. The judicial system is an educational tool to initiate student development, learning, and responsibility. The office will address unacceptable behavior in a manner that informs students and guides them towards modified behavior. The office will oversee that fairness and due process is met while administering the concepts outlined in the WKU and Western University Student Handbook. It's important to note that the goal of going towards modifying their behavior is the critical component to the outcomes that we want. In the behavioral agreements that we set our students up with, or if we put them on a probationary period where we observe their behavior, those are all things to guide them towards modifying their behavior, giving them an opportunity to learn from their mistake and to do what they've come here to do at WKU and to receive a degree. Statement of values. These are just some things that I want students to gain when they walk in the door specifically from me. I want to educate them. I want my fundamental purpose to be education. I want to teach them when I can teach them. I want to treat each person that walks in the door with dignity and respect. My responsibility is to treat them how I want to be treated. So when they walk out of my office, they really feel as though there's been a positive interaction personally and not a negative interaction based on their behavior. I have a responsibility to the university and the students. My job is to uphold the university mission and ensure that our students are afforded opportunities for civic engagement with respect to others. Rights and responsibilities. That's not the code of conduct. That's in order to foster an environment where student learning and growth can be maximized. The Office of Judicial Affairs has a responsibility to inform all students of their rights and responsibilities. Students are citizens and members of the university academic community. So it's my point to make sure that every student knows that they have a responsibility themselves being a student here at WKU. The privacy and due process piece is to make sure that I'm fundamentally just hold their confidentiality. I'm going to hear a lot of things when I'm dealing with students. A lot of things that come from just your basic behavior. Student is arrested for a DUI. There are things that come out of that conversation that are far, far greater than just the action of getting behind the wheel and drinking and driving. So a lot of those things I have to build the confidence and ensure the students that I hold their privacy to the peers. One other piece that is a component to my office switching gears here to some of the committees and stakeholders that I work with is the University Disciplinary Committee. This University Disciplinary Committee is comprised of 13 members. This committee was actually put together by the Board of Regents of WKU in accordance to the Kentucky Revised Statutes. The committee, consisting of 13 members, 6 of them faculty, 3 staff, and 4 students, they hear cases that involve levels of student conduct that may result in suspension or expulsion. So when students are referred to the University Disciplinary Committee, it's pretty serious that they violated student code of conduct. At least 7 members have to be present. We've now got it set up where they meet at least once a week. So it's very important that, as we talk about timely manner, we have that cycle. So if students are involved with major violations of student code of conduct, we're ready to meet that process of making sure that student is dealt with fundamentally fair. This year, the chair is Dr. John Harden. So let me make sure I mention him as well. Next set of stakeholders that I work with is my campus partners team. This team is comprised, it's based out of Gary Favela, his model in which he was consultant to the Governor's Task Force for Campus Safety and Security for the state of Wisconsin. He also spoke to Virginia Tech faculty in July of 2007 for managing at-risk students. The purpose of this committee is comprised of several stakeholders on campus, looking at people on campus that are involved with the law enforcement, the police departments on this committee, university standards operations, the medical staff, Libby Green, going back to the names, Carrie Hatchett, and David Emerson, as well as Brad Senate President's Life, Lynn Holland, and Steve Briggs. The Sexual Assault Coordinator is Ms. Elizabeth Mohan. Counseling is Dr. Brian Van Brunt, and then Academic Retention is Kevin Thomas. We have several people on our staff, on that team, that come together in a collaborative effort to assess disruptive behaviors on campus. So this is a very critical team that we have. The mission of this team is to, if we're committed to student success and strive to maintain a campus environment that is conducive to learning both in and out of the classroom, our team aims to provide a safe educational opportunity of all members of its university community. We're designated to be a proactive group, and that's the point of us meeting on a weekly basis. We want to be proactive dealing with student behavior. I won't read all these to you, but it's very important for you to know that what we do, our approach is a threat assessment approach based on analysis of observable behavior compiled from multiple sources and reviewed by our team. So we'll get information from Residence Life. We'll get information from a faculty member. We'll get information from other students about students who they may be concerned with. So we'll discuss the students of concern. We'll put a game plan together for that particular student. We'll respond to this student in a way that we're trying to get them what they may need to deal with the behavior and try to get identify the resources for these troubled students. One of the other things that we respond to critically is we respond to circumstances of violence, disruptive behavior, and unwanted pursuit or harassment. Those are one of the things, too, that we really make sure that our office, that our team looks at. Weekly assessment of outcomes and actions are taken. So when we meet weekly, we come back to the table with the conclusion to our plan of action. Again, these are the people that I named that are on the committee, and I did leave off Mr. Kenneth Johnson, who's the coordinator for student programs. What my office can do for you. Clear up questions about policies, protocol, strategies for enforcing the student code of conduct. I can meet with you to strategize solutions to community-wide concerns. I can also provide standalone or collaborative programs and presentations. I think it's important to get out this information to students. I just did an ATP yesterday where I met with some parents, and it was very, very important to them to know if the name of the session was how students succeed in college. But it's kind of a flip to the presentation because I'm really informing the parents what they need to know to help their sons and daughters succeed in college. So we go over the student code of conduct, which you have in front of you. We talk about number one, dishonesty. We talk about number two, the drug policy. We talk about number three, the alcohol policy. We even talk about number 13, which is shared responsibilities. We talk about if you're in a room and something's happening and you don't remove yourself, you can be held accountable for those actions. So having parents be informed of these codes of conduct ahead of time allow them to go back and have these conversations with their sons and daughters to allow them to set them up to be successful here in college. The other piece of that is to talk to them about the drug policy and to really get in depth with them about the importance of the influences of other students on their son or daughter. We know that they're coming to Western Kentucky highly influential as first-year students, so it's important to make sure the parents know some of the pitfalls that come along with students that they enter into my office and meet with the Residence Life office. So it's very important to have that conversation with parents. I talk to parents about parental notification. I let them know that parental notification is a partnership with my office. I don't see when the phone rings and it's a parent, it's something negative. It's positive. It shows me that the parents care, and I want them to know that we care. And I want them to know what strategies we put together for their sons and daughters so that they can be successful. So I've told them, that, you know, we refer to those parents as helicopter parents. Well, I tell them I want them to have their pilot's license. I want them to come fly with me because I really want them to understand that I need their support on their side so that I can make sure that what I'm programming their student to do on this side is working. So that's one of the things I get excited about, and Howard kind of turned that over to me, but I'm really excited because it really gets that information out to the parents, and so many of them come up after the session, and they're just so thankful of what we tell them and what we're talking to them about, because a lot of them, first-generation college students, they don't know this information. The parents don't know this information, so it's very critical that we have our presentation set up the way that we do. One of the things that my office can't do is I can't give the appearance of bias towards the faculty or staff perspective. Plenty of times my phone calls, I want this person out of my class, or I want this person kicked out of school. Well, again, I can't do that. You know, I just give me the report, let me do what I need to do. All of our decisions are based on the preponderance of the evidence. This is not a court of law. We don't have hearings. We don't have a gavel. We just meet with a student, we talk with the student, and we get the information from the student, and we make the decision that is best for the student and the university alike. So when we make decisions, and I tell parents this, I don't get $5 for every student I put out of school. You know, that's not my game plan. That's not my model. What I'm trying to do is rebuild your student, trying to give them the tools that they need so they can get back on the right track to be successful and graduate from WKU. I can't tell you the predetermined outcome of a conference. I don't know that. You know, I have precedents. I do know some things that have happened in the past, but every student comes in with their own individual story and identity to tell me so that I can make the best decision for them and for the university. So no predetermined outcomes. I can't tell you that I'm going to kick them out for what they've done. I can give the appearance of bias towards the staff perspective. You know, it could be that a student thinks that the hall director doesn't like them or that the officer treated them wrong or, you know, those types of things I have to filter out. And I have to make sure that the students understand that this office is treating them with fairness, fundamentally fairness, being fundamentally fair and treating them with the individual dignity and respect that they deserve. What do you still want to know?
I have a request. As faculty work very hard to promote academic integrity amongst our students, it would be really helpful if you could send us those brand new links to the academic dishonesty pieces, okay, student rights and responsibilities, so that we may update our syllabuses so they go to the right links.
Yes. And it'll be important for you to know that one of the codes of conduct that changed this year has to do with classroom behavior, and that it specifically states that the student will be bound to the syllabus as it's written by the faculty. Because what I ran into this year was when I get conversations from faculty, I say, what does your syllabus say?
Right.
You have the right, based on what the syllabus says, to enforce what it is you want to do, and I'll support that. So I made sure that was in writing, because a lot of students I was getting in the office, there was nothing that followed the code of conduct that showed that they're accountable for their behavior in the classroom as well, according to the syllabus and the teacher's expectations. So, yes, I'll make sure you get that one.
Excellent. And sooner rather than later, if you can, because many of us are well into our syllabus preparation right now. Thank you so much.
Michael, I can tell from your talk, and by the way, you did a really good job.
Yeah.
You're student-friendly, and that's a good thing. I think, obviously, they need some help sometimes when they get out of line, but I can tell what you're doing is going to be great for our students.
If parents don't come to the orientation, do they still get a copy of the code of conduct and the students get a copy?
It's on my website, and the link is there for them. It's a PDF link for them to get. Work Residence Life does an excellent job of making sure that that information gets to the students through the first four meetings, master plan, and different orientations. So it gets to the students. A lot of times some of the parents that don't attend the ATPs don't get it, but it is there on the website for them to get. We're going to make sure that, as I said, I'm excited to get the office out front. A lot of my campaigning and publicity for this year to get that information out there is to make sure that the parents know the information as well.
And that's good, and the websites are good, but there are a lot of parents that just aren't yet on websites, you know.
Every 2 years, and we once printed this document every year, we're now printing it every 2 years. We do make the updated changes on the website annually, but we print about 4,000 hard copies, and any parent that makes a referral request, then we'll put them a copy in the mail.
Yeah, and I guess if you run into a situation with a student, then that's an indication that that parents need to have this.
Yes.
And maybe you can get one in the mail to them that way.
And parents do receive particularly on alcohol and drug-related cases, that parent notification, they receive a letter from Michael's office indicating that student has had an encounter that brought them before his office or in Resident Life. So they receive a letter telling them.
Excellent job, Michael.
Michael, a couple of points. First of all, you've got a great mentor. And Howard's been around that block many times, and he knows the block well, and it's clear to me that I see a lot of Howard's influence on this. So, Howard, well done for you as well. Three observations in listening to you, and I've been looking forward to your presentation, because the way I approach my work is to trust you and stay out of your business, and I'm rewarded in that, because in 12 years as president, I could count on one hand the number of disciplinary cases that have reached my desk, and that's a good thing. And that's a huge factor in my ability to be successful and focus on what I need to be doing. And so, great job. You're being proactive. A few years ago, Deborah Wilkins and I had a conversation, and her world changed in that her approach as university attorney went from defending us to keeping us out of court in the first place. Her job is to see that we do all we can do to keep from getting there in the first place. And when we get there, we'll defend ourselves. You're approaching your work in much the same way. Help students not get to a point where they're having to come before the judicial review process. But when they do, it's fair, it has integrity, and it's firm. Clearly, you're following that line of thought. Maybe the integrity is the most important word. They have to know that it is without bias. There's enough of that going around already, mm-hmm. and it has no place in your world, and you clearly are leading by example. So great work. Great work.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if it'd be in order, would you like to leave it up, Mr. Bailey, as to whether he'd like to make that presentation after lunch on the housing, or would you like to make a very brief one? It's your call, Howard.
No, I'm fine. We can come back. I can come back.
Let's break for lunch, and then we'll pick that up and then go to the President's report after that. Good job.